This is Charudas, welcoming you to Bhagavad Gita as it is, study sessions. Today we're in the 17th chapter. The 17th chapter is entitled The Divisions of Faith. This is the second verse. I'll read the Sanskrit, then the English, then we'll talk about it. Si Bhagavan Upacha Trividha Bhagavati Srata Dehinam Shashabhavaja Sattviki Rajasi Chaiva Tamasi Cheti Tamshnu. Translation: The Supreme Personality of God had said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds: in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Now hear about this. I'll be back in a minute. Stressing the need to accept a bona fide spiritual master for progressive advancement in spiritual life. And there are many quotes to that effect in the scriptures. For instance, Tad vigyanartam sa gurumev vigachet samitpani srottam brahmanishtam. It is said that in order to make advancement in spiritual life, one must accept a bona fide spiritual master. The next question that arises is, what is a bona fide spiritual master? Well, that key is given in the verse I just quoted, samitpani srottam brahmanishtam. The primary qualification for a spiritual master has nothing to do with his weight, his size, the color of his eyes, the texture of his hair, the texture of his skin. It has nothing to do with how well he speaks, what colleges he went to, whether he can screw up his body into all kinds of gymnastic postures and look like a pretzel, whether he's lived in seclusion for so many years, what penances and austerities he's done. The qualifications of a bona fide spiritual master hinge upon one quality. Of course, if he has other qualities on top of that, then that's well and good, icing on the cake. But without this one quality, no one should claim to be a bona fide spiritual master. Suti smiti paranadi pancharidiki vidhim vidha ait kantiki hare bhaktir upatyaiva kalpate. This verse means that anyone who puts himself forward as a bona fide spiritual master without this one qualification creates an unnecessary disturbance in society. By now, I'm sure you're curious to know what that one qualification is. Srotyam brahmanishtam. It means he must be a good hearer. Hearing is important, even in material life, what to speak of spiritual life. The Sperry Corporation, a very big corporation that employs thousands of people, did a study whereby they linked a man's success in life directly with his ability to hear. In retail customer relationships, the image that a store or a corporation has with the public depends largely upon the ability of the corporation to hear what suggestions, what comments, what complaints the customers have about their services. If you want to advance to a higher job position, a better salary, then you had better listen very carefully to what your boss has to tell you. In spiritual life, hearing is no less important. In fact, in spiritual life, hearing assumes the primary importance. Our spiritual master, Swami Prabhupada, was one among many, many other initiated disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And all of those disciples, they preached to a greater or lesser degree. But of course, the greatest preacher amongst all of them was Srila Prabhupada. Now, he wasn't a big sannyasi, he wasn't a big brahmachari. During his lifetime in India, he never even lived in the temples of his spiritual master. Although his godbrothers could see that he was very qualified, and often, particularly when Prabhupada was living in Bombay, doing business outside the temple, the God brothers went to Bhaktisiddhanta and they said, this Bhaktivedanta is very qualified. Why don't we make him president of the Bombay Center? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, there's no need. He will do everything in due course of time. Why did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta pick out of all of his many, many disciples, some of whom were more fully involved at the time in the preaching movement than Swami Prabhupada? Why did he pick him? He was a householder. He wasn't a renounced order of life at that time. He said, he will surpass all the other of my disciples because he can hear. He can hear very nicely. One time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was conducting what is called a parikram in the holy land of Vrindavan. As you know, Vrindavan is the place where Lord Krishna appeared. And in the 32 square mile area of Vrindavan, just south of Delhi, there are all kinds of temples and holy places where one can go, where 5,000 years ago Lord Krishna enacted his pastimes. Bhaktisiddhanta and all of his disciples made a one-week tour by foot of all those holy places. On the last night of the seven-day program, the following day Bhaktisiddhanta was supposed to go back to Delhi. There was a choice of hearing the talks of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta or going to one further place of pilgrimage that no one had been visiting before. So most of the disciples elected to go and to see this other place of pilgrimage. However, Srila Prabhupada was one of the few that remained behind to hear the lecture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Now, you've never heard a lecture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. You may or may not have read some of his books. But take it from me, it's very tough going. A great scholar, wonderful vocabulary. It's very difficult when you read his books to even understand what he's saying. You have to study, you have to have your dictionary, your thesaurus right beside you. It is said that he's one of the greatest scholars in the last five centuries in the world. But nevertheless, Srila Prabhupada stayed, even though he may or may not have understood every single word. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta remarked that this man, he likes to hear. The others, they wanted to see something. They wanted to see another temple. But no one will make nearly as much spiritual advancement through their eyes as they will through their ears. For instance, can you see God with your eyes? You cannot. But through the Bhagavad Gita, you can actually hear about God. You can experience God through your ears immediately without any prior qualification. Whereas to see God with the eyes, that great honor is reserved only for those who have for many, many lifetimes been hearing attentively the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And no one has ever seen God except that they have heard about His glories, realized Him through the ears, drunk His glories through the ears preliminarily. So a bona fide guru is one who hears very nicely. Now what does he hear? Does he just hear what the locals, the latest stock market reports are? Does he hear what is on the radio happening in Afghanistan? Does he hear about the latest breakdown in relations between Russia and America? He's a good hearer, but not just everyone who's a good hearer is a bona fide guru. It's important what he hears. A bona fide guru, samipani srutyam brahmanishtam, he must hear the absolute truth. And where will he get the absolute truth? He'll get it from scriptures. The Vedic scriptures particularly are described as the breathing emanating from the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord, when he breathes out in his form of Vishnu, he creates this material world in both its gross and subtle aspects, and simultaneously he creates certain hymns, certain sound vibrations. Just like the manufacturer of a tape recorder, whenever he produces and puts the tape recorder on the market, accompanying that tape recorder is a manual, an instruction manual how to use it. Similarly, at the same time, simultaneous with the creation of the elements of this material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead emanates sacred sound vibrations, which are called the Vedic scriptures. And those Vedic scriptures give full information and instructions on how to live in the world successfully, at the same time not be of the world, not be entangled in the karmic actions and reactions of this material world, and at the end of life to go back to home, back to Godhead. So So Shastra, another name in Sanskrit, means to control or to rule. One whose life is ruled by the scriptures through the intermediary of a bona fide spiritual master hasn't got any problems in life. Bona fide spiritual master is one who has assimilated the Vedic truths, who can repeat and deliver those truths to any sincere person, and last but not least, he himself exemplifies those truths, not only verbally, but in terms of his deeds and thoughts as well. Acharya, the whole Vedic civilization is running on the strength of maybe 6 or 10 personalities who were so purified by their scholarship, their philosophy, and their adherence to the Vedic principles that they literally attracted the minds of millions and millions of people throughout hundreds and hundreds of years. Some of those acharyas are Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sankaracharya, Nimbarka Swami, Narottam Das Thakur, Jiva Goswami, so many acharyas, big and little. Acharya means one who sets by teaches by example. Yad yad acharati strestas. Strestas means the ultimate goal of life. You have many people who teach by example how to get immediate sense gratification. You have your beer drinkers that you see advertising Bud Light on the television. You have all kinds of people in this day and age who are very expert at immediate gratification of the senses. But one who is expert at how to ultimately achieve life's supreme goal, going back to home, back to Gaya, he is called an acharya. He has in mind the ultimate benefit of mankind and he acts in that way. Someone said, if you want to know whether you're acting in a pure way, try to judge whether every single action that you do could be made into a universal law. Could the actions of the beer, do you think that we would want everyone drinking gallons of beer, everyone chasing women? Just look at all the items, commodities that are promoted on television, radio, and newspaper. Consider the way that they are promoted, the lifestyle along with which they are promoted, and then just extrapolate that and imagine that everybody, if everybody on the planet acted just like they want you to act in one or any number of those television commercials, what kind of a world would we be living in? Already the world is chaotic because of the addiction of people in the Western countries to material affluence and sense gratification and hedonism, and the third world countries are just waiting in line to get into the chaos. So just imagine what kind of a world we'll have when everybody in the whole world can have as much sex, as much drugs, as much cigarettes, as much alcohol as they want. A wonderful world, wouldn't it? And of course, some people would say that, yes, that is exactly where human society is heading. And that is what we want to achieve. Of course, I think with a little common sense, we could understand that to which we're heading is only hell. It is another name for hell. An acharya is one who teaches, whose every action, if it were adopted as the standard way of acting for every man, woman, and child, if they followed and styled their lives after the lives of the real acharyas, this earthly planet would be non-different from the spiritual world. There would be perfect peace, there would be no crime, there would be no conflict, there would be no breakup of families. This is the real meaning of an acharya, one who acts in an exemplary way and then he teaches according to his actions. He doesn't act in an erratic manner and then just like they say, practice, do as I say, not as I do. One time, this is a story, slightly humorous, a mother brought her child to a holy man. And she said to the holy man, I have a problem. He said, what is that? She said, this boy is addicted to chocolate. He eats chocolate day and night. He gets sick, he gets pimples. Can you tell this boy not to eat chocolate? And the holy man said, he thought a moment, he hesitated, he said, bring him back in a week and then I'll tell him. So the mother dutifully took the boy away. 1 week later she brought him back. And she said, now can you tell him? He said, yes. He said, don't eat chocolate, with great force and impact and persuasiveness. The boy was really affected by it. So then, after the boy had gone out of the cave or whatever, or hut, the mother said, "I'm just curious about one thing." He said, "What?" She said, "Why didn't you tell him that a week ago, instead of waiting a week to tell him?" He said, "Before I could tell him to give up eating chocolate," he said, "I had to give it up myself." This is a bona fide guru, not just preaching, but acting also according to the precepts which he puts forward too. So here in this verse, the second verse in the 17th chapter, Bhagavad Gita is a series of questions which Arjuna puts to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Krishna is the original guru, and whatever answers he gives in the form of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, other gurus in disciplic succession throughout the ages, they repeat those answers. So here Arjuna says, what is the position? Because generally we think of religious faith as a good thing. But all through the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has been stressing knowledge, logic, reasoning. So Arjuna says, what is the position of a man of faith who has set aside the scriptural injunctions? He doesn't follow the scriptures, he doesn't have a bona fide guru, but yet he's got a lot of faith. There are many pseudo-gurus who may have powerful, charismatic personalities, but they don't know the scriptures. They call some unbonafide gathering of people. The people are suitably impressed, and they develop some faith in that guru. That faith is blind faith. It is misguided faith. It is faith only in his personality. There is no system of checks or balances. He is not, called to accounts by any scriptural authority. He may do whatever he wants, and the followers, of course, follow him at their own risk and their own peril. So what is the position of a person who has a tendency towards strong faith, but the person in whom he has faith is not a proper leader, is one who's not schooled in the scriptural authority? Well, then the answer to that, what is the fate of those followers, it depends upon which of the three modes of material nature that guru happens to be situated in. There are three modes, as I've repeatedly said. There's sattva, rajas, and tama. There's goodness, passion, and ignorance. If the spiritual master is in ignorance, then his followers will also be in ignorance, and there's no possibility of advancing in spiritual life. If the so-called spiritual leader is in passion, then still there's not much of a possibility of following spiritual life. Spiritual leaders, pseudo-leaders in the mode of passion, generally they make a show of giving some spiritual technique like yoga or meditation, but they don't ask their followers to follow the scriptural principles. What are those scriptural principles? No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no intoxication. No meat eating, thou shalt not kill. No illicit sex, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. No intoxication, and no gambling. These are rules which are laid down in the scriptures, and if anyone doesn't follow those rules, he'll never make spiritual advancement. Only one who follows these rules is situated in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, he may do some yogic practices, stand on his head or whatever, but if he doesn't follow these rules, his so-called spiritual practices practice in the mode of passion. It takes on the external manifestation of spirituality, but it is rotten at its very core. It is rotten at its very root, because he has not embarked upon that spiritual discipline with a motive to get free from material entanglements, but rather he feels that if he does some yoga or some meditation or some austerities, then he will be able to enjoy more fully. He will be able to have more vim and vigor with which he can eat, drink, and be merry. So until one is in the mode of goodness, he hasn't come to the springboard from which he could vault himself into Sudasattva, pure goodness or eternal life. Now the Mayavadis or the impersonals, they say it's all one. It's all one. Goodness, passion, ignorance, it's all part of nature, it's all one. There's no difference between any of them. But take wood, smoke, and fire. Now if you get some wood, that doesn't mean that you can cook with the wood. In one sense, wood, smoke, and fire are one, but in another sense, can you cook with wood? Can you cook with smoke? Now, you'll never find smoke without fire being present nearby. So where there's smoke, there's fire. But still, although smoke and fire are one, still you can't cook with smoke. Similarly, there are three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Until you come into the mode of goodness, which means to follow the scriptural authorities, there's no question of doing spiritual business. You get wood first, then from wood you get smoke, and then you get fire. You require the flame. Getting the wood is not the finish of your work, but only when you have flame can you cook. So similarly, one may do spiritual practices which look bona fide externally, but if those spiritual practices are in the mode of passion, and if the practitioner does not give up all materialistic addictions, smoking, drinking, etc., it's not really spiritual life. It may have the appearance of it, just like in the early morning, there's a little glimmer of the sun on the horizon. You can't see the sun, but there just begins to be a little, the blackness decreases slightly. You still can't see anything. You have to grope around, banging into trees and all. But the darkness is just a little less black. But it's still darkness. Similarly, spiritual practices in the mode of passion may look like spiritual life. They may be a glimmer of spiritual life, but they're not really spiritual life. Only when one follows scriptures according to the directions of a bona fide spiritual master can he begin to make advancement in spiritual life. And anyone who practices any other kind of pseudo-spirituality, but he doesn't want to give up eating meat, smoking, drinking, intoxication, chasing women and gambling, he's only fooling himself and fooling others.
You've been listening to commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of India's Vedic wisdom and one of the great spiritual and philosophical classics of the world. The ultimate conclusion of the Gita is unconditional loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, bringing one to complete enlightenment and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode.